Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
What's up, Fungal Associates? Welcome to Completely Arbutrary. The podcast about trees and other related topics. I'm one of your hosts. My name is Alex Croson. And as always, I'm here with Mr. Casey Clapp.
Well, hello.
Hi, Case.
How you doing, Alex?
I'm doing well. I'm going to actually turn this down a little bit. A little hot. I'm doing okay, Casey. It is, as you know, Halloween is upon us.
It is. That is correct.
The spooky month is upon us.
Today is essentially Halloween.
Essentially.
Basically.
Today plus like 4 or 5 days.
Which is usually what I do. I think today is, as I usually refer to it, plus or minus 4 days.
You know, that's a, I think that's like a millennial thing, is being
really?
Like, it's my birthday month or it's my birthday week. Like
yeah.
Kind of extending celebrations past just the day that they happen.
Yeah, it's true. There's
we have so little else to hold on to. We're like, yeah, I'm going to spend the whole month celebrating this
yeah,
thing.
Yeah, you know what? This whole year is my birthday year.
Yeah, you know what? It's true. Yes. Every year is my birthday year.
Yeah.
Treat every day like it's your birthday.
Now that is, that's a little self-serving, don't you think?
That means I get cake every day.
Every day.
Yeah.
Get offended if anyone doesn't tell you happy birthday on
yes.
that given day.
Of course I do.
Hey, you know what? Don't be so rude. It's my birthday. Like, what are you talking about? It's your birthday like 2 months ago.
No, don't give me a bill for my meal. It's my birthday.
Oh, that would be good though. Just keep doing that. So everyone's like, oh, all right. Well, you know what? We're going to give you this dessert for
That's
free.
That's right.
And you just constantly get that no one checks.
I don't know why people don't do that more. It's a little skeezy. That's
it
why.
It is a little skeezy,
It's morally gray.
I think gray is, it's probably, it's on the, I think the hue probably, it's like, what, I'm sorry, it's a shade.
The dark gray?
That's a darker gray.
Okay.
That shade of gray, it's on the kinkier side.
Hey, Casey.
Yeah?
Speaking of grays, today we are talking about.
Look at that.
A great tree. That is kind of gray.
Yes, it is.
And this is the, now, make sure you're not easily scared here.
Yeah.
I'll say it really fast. The ghost pine.
Alex, what's behind you? Oh my God.
Casey, what's the scientific name of this one?
Oh, this is Pinus sabiniana.
Sabiniana.
Yes. More on that later.
Oh, wow.
I'm very excited to talk about that.
I am so excited to talk about this one. It's a bit of a, I'm kind of proud of us because we've created a bit of synergy here.
Yes, we have.
Because our current Cone of the Month Club cone.
Yes, which as of today, you have 4 days left.
That's
to
right.
Sign up for.
Patreon.com/arbitrarypod. Join the Cone of the Month Club and you get cones by amazing artists sent to you every month as stickers.
That's
you can
right.
put them on stuff. You can collect them, whatever. I don't give a shit.
Yeah. Whatever you do with your cone is your business. In a literal sense, your cones are your own.
Wow. Mm-hmm. But this month's cone is the Ghost Pine by our favorite human and artist, Leanne Pflug.
Yes. God dang delight.
A wonderful person and a very talented artist. You can find a picture of that on the Instagram, and I bet you'll be sold. So today, we are talking Ghost Pine, Pinus Sylvaniana.
Sabiniana.
Sabiniana.
Mm-hmm.
But we got to do it after a very spooky ad break. We will be right back with Completely Arbutrary. Hi, everybody. Or should I say, hola a todos. I want you to hear something. It's this. Yes, that is the sound of learning a new language with Babbel. You have, of course, heard of Babbel. You maybe even used Babbel. But if you haven't, Babbel is an app that helps you learn languages. Babbel is a science-backed learning language app that actually works. Let me put it this way. I knew somebody who used a different language app for 365 days and still could not even have basic conversations in the language they were learning on that app. Babbel is not this. They have quick 10-minute lessons and they're handcrafted by 200 language experts, so you can start learning a new language in as little as 3 weeks. Because it's designed by real people for real conversations. In fact, a recent study found that using Babbel for 15 hours is equivalent to a full semester at college. And of course, the best way to learn a new language is immersion. You go and live in the place where the people speak the language you're learning. You speak to the people, they speak back. But the second best way is Babbel. And it's practical. It will very quickly teach you how to order food, ask for directions, speak to shopkeepers without having to consult language apps while you're on vacation. And here is a special limited time deal for our listeners right now. Get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription, but only for Fungal Associates at babbel.com/trees. That's right. If you're listening to this, if you're a fan of this show, babbel.com/trees. Get 60% off your subscription. That's babbel.com/trees. Rules and restrictions may apply. Adios. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Hi, everybody. It's Alex here. And you know what? Come springtime, those trees are a-bloomin'. Those people are a-walkin' around. That sun is a-shinin'. And it makes me so grateful for my social life. People are wanting to do things again, and it can be extremely rewarding to start to see friends more often and, you know, go on cute friend dates or romantical dates, sit on a patio and drink a coffee. Ooh la la. But it's really easy to overdo it. And for me, it's very important to keep an eye on my social battery. Every time I go on a social outing, I come home and I'm like, wow, I am really tired in a very specific way. Well, that's my battery. That's my social battery being drained. And I didn't really have this language until I started going to therapy. I didn't know why being around people made me so exhausted, even though I love those people and enjoy being around them. But therapy helped me with my self-awareness and helped me unlock some language that I didn't otherwise have. And if you are struggling with feelings and thoughts that you don't understand, therapy can be a great way to unlock the power of understanding. And a great way to start is BetterHelp. It's completely online and it's designed to be super convenient and flexible, which is very important. How many times have you had a therapy session on the calendar and that time rolls around and you think, I gotta drive all the way across town. I am not gonna go. It has, of course, happened to me. I'm sure it's happened to everybody who's been in therapy. No worries with BetterHelp. It's all online. And all you have to do is fill out a brief questionnaire. You get matched with a licensed therapist, of course. And nobody nails it on their first time. It's like going on dates. You gotta find the right therapist for you. It's silly to think that the very first date you ever go on is going to be your future spouse. So you can switch therapists at any time, no additional charge. It's extremely easy. So find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/trees today to get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/trees. Happy spring! Welcome back to Completely Arbutrary. I should commit, you know?
You really should. Why are you not? I think you have.
completely are boo cherry.
Oh, that's the commitment.
Like acting.
Oh, I do like you being almost an announcer who just reads everything. But
like
doesn't...
it's an obligation.
Exactly. Yeah. Welcome back to Completely Arbitrary.
We brought to you by Pepsi.
Yeah, exactly. And it was like, well, he really did not sell that, but I kind of dig the undersale here.
Today we are talking Ghost Pine.
That's right.
I'm surprised you are even going to be or listen to this episode, Casey.
Why?
Because before the break, you and I went on a 20-minute tangent.
That's true.
Where I learned something about you that yes. You are very afraid of ghosts.
I am. I'm afraid of ghosts. I don't like spooky behavior.
Movies. Yeah. Spooky behavior.
So, you know, yeah, it's a holiday that historically I have been like disinclined to really enjoy because everyone's like, oh, you want to go to a haunted mansion? Right. And I'm like, no, absolutely not. Yeah, I don't want to go to that thing. I don't want to get scared. I don't enjoy it. And I will go to the bar and drink a beer. I'll see you at the end.
Well, this might be the perfect way for you to enjoy the spooky season to talk about the Ghost Pine.
All right, Alex, I'll see you later. Have fun with the podcast. I'll see you when it's done. Let me know when we're giving our rating.
Let's imagine, as we do every episode, that we are walking around, say, well, I know of a heritage tree in Portland is a ghost pine over there in the Overlook District.
I think we should be walking around a cemetery.
Let's walk around a cemetery, and there's some ghost pines.
Yep.
Let's ID this tree.
All right, Alex. So the first thing you'll notice that it's a very ephemeral, ethereal tree.
Wow.
You see it, and you're like, did I see that?
You know, I will say it is wispy.
It is. It's very wispy. And I guess we should also note that this is, we'll talk about the name a little bit later, but a lot of people might know this as the gray pine or the ghost pine. I personally, if you say, hey, of these two names, which do you choose? It's going to be ghost pine.
That's easy.
It's such a cool name.
Yeah.
So that is why if anyone's like, oh, well, I get what you're doing, but you're not using like the name that most people use. Sorry. This is an artistic choice.
You have to have some fun.
Thank you. I agree with you entirely.
Thank you.
This is a tree that is a pine tree, another conifer. We have not done a conifer, I don't think, in a long time, so I'm happy
really?
To do that. Yeah, it feels like it's been a while.
That's shocking to me.
Yeah, it is. It's shocking to most people, I think.
Well, let's talk about the overall morphology of this
tree. Let's do it, Alex. So this is a tree that grows in a way that's different than most pines. Hmm. So you generally expect a pine tree grows up with a single stem. It has branches coming out left and right.
Sure.
Creates this conical habit. Our tree, the ghost pine, does not do that.
Wow.
Pinus sabiniana is a tree that grows in the, essentially think of the foothills that are around the Central Valley of California.
Okay.
All of the hills and valleys, or the hills around that valley, is the habitat for this tree.
Interesting.
They don't grow on the very ground on the bottom of that valley, and they don't grow up in the higher hills above it. They grow just in this kind of meso area that's not only hot and dry, but it's also not quite super duper hot and dry, and it's not quite super duper hot yet kind of wet.
Okay.
So they have this nice little kind of medium habitat. And they grow up with multiple stems, which is, I think, really kind of interesting. They end up growing one stem that starts it out, but then all their other branches continue to grow up and out. So they have this very, everything's growing up and out in a bush-like fashion. And even some of the younger, or the lowest limbs, not younger, they grow up and out and become full stems in and of themselves.
Yeah, it looks a little, broadleaf-like.
It does, yeah.
Overall morphology.
Right? It has much more of a decurrent look rather than X-current. X-current being that perfect triangle that you expect, and the decurrent would be more growing up and out like a broadleaf tree.
Thank you.
So they also tend not to grow very straight. They kind of always have a little bit of a lean on them. I don't know if this is really a tell that's like for whatever reason, like madrone, you know, you'll never find a straight madrone growing like an oak or a maple.
Sure.
You also will not generally find these trees growing as like this perfect archetypal upright tree.
Interesting. Is that more nature or nurture?
You know, I think this is probably...
I guess it's all nature for trees.
More nature, yeah. I was like, how do I answer this question?
You reckon that's like in their DNA or if that's like an environmental response?
Yeah, I think it's probably more in their DNA where I think that they are just... They just grow up and out kind of like big, big shrubby things.
Okay.
Now, they do have a single stem most often that then branches into these other stems, but... It's casual enough where I think you can call this a unique habit.
Cool.
You know? So that is what you're going to see from afar. They don't get very tall. That is kind of a fun thing based on where they grow, because they grow in this mesic kind of dry habitat. So things don't grow giantly tall in those kinds of habitats because it's mostly just a lot of work getting water up there.
Sure. So it's also dry.
Exactly.
Is that why you're, yeah, that's
yeah,
why.
It's a little bit both. So the higher you grow, the more you have to work to get your small amount of water way up to the top of your tree. So it's just trees tend to grow a little bit slower. They only get to about 70 feet or so. Hmm. So they're not giant trees by any means.
They're not competing necessarily for light.
Not really. They compete a lot with oaks, actually.
Oh.
So they are a chaparral species. Chaparral meaning like low, dense growing shrubby tree things.
Okay.
And they will grow in the higher latitude section, where a lot of this is like very classically Southern California is very known for its chaparral. Mm. And so they grow with a lot of oak species. So mostly oaks and these pines are where you're going to find, or what you're going to find in this kind of ring around the Central Valley.
Okay.
So they are gorgeous, gorgeous trees. I think because their foliage, and you can see this from afar, you can pick them out from afar as like these patches, almost like you see someone with like a blonde patch of hair.
Yeah.
Everywhere else is some other brownish color.
Sure.
This is exactly that, where you see like these darker blues, like greens. So like so dark blue that they're very like, you can't tell that they're not green.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's this like this splash of light gray.
Yeah.
And then you see a splash of light gray over there, because they don't always grow in like groves where there's like a whole forest of them.
Okay.
There's just like, there's one. Oh, there's a few. There's another. There's one, and they're just, you can see them and you're like, whoa, what is that thing over there?
They earn the name gray pine.
They really do. It's a fantastic, perfect name for them. And on top of this, as you get closer to those adorable little needles, you'll find that they are needles in bundles of three.
That's right.
Three needles, and they're long, like probably about a foot or a little bit less.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So about 30 centimeters or so is their highest level.
It's a big ass needle. I feel like in general, pine needles are longer than other conifers. Am I right?
Yes, I think you are.
Okay.
There are very few that reach the lengths of long pine needles.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like any fir, anything like that. Nah, they stay really short.
Right.
Yeah,
that's spruce a very good, also.
Yeah, definitely. It's a good observation, Alex.
There you go.
I had not thought about that.
Not the first person to say it, I'm sure.
Huh.
Can we breeze past the needles? They're three needles. Cool.
They three. Okay. Next question.
But I want to talk about, it's almost like Coulter has like a creepy evil twin.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. A smaller twin. It's like a little brother.
Yeah.
You know, it's the little brother that, what is now? Nah, I was going to think of a good metaphor based on a Danny DeVito and John Travolta movie, but not John
twins.
Travolta. No, twins, but it's not,
Arnold,
it's
Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Yeah. But I like this tree more than saying it was made with the shit left over. So I don't think it's appropriate to call this the Danny DeVito of the pair.
Thank you. What I'm getting at is that the cone of the ghost pine is just like a mini little gray version
extraordinary
of a Coulter pine. Now Casey is rummaging in his rucksack, and of course he is producing a ghost pine
here
cone.
Here, Alex, catch.
Oh my God.
I'm not going to throw it. You'd hurt yourself.
I didn't even flinch because I knew you wouldn't do it.
Oh, good. All right. This is it. All right. I'm going to hand it to you.
Oh, okay. Casey's handing me this ghost pine cone. I'll say right off the bat, it is softer around the edges than its Coulter brother.
Yes, it totally is. Yeah, yeah. And they tend to not be as tall. And the way that I've always imagined is that Coulter pine, it's way longer. It tends to be more of a very light tan orangish color.
Yeah.
And the ghost pine, the cones are far smaller, like almost three quarters the size or half the size.
Mm-hmm.
And they have their scales come out and then they go down and then they have little bits that pop out, where the Coulter pine tends to have these longer scales that kind of come a little bit more up.
Yeah.
And then they're barbed, like their hooks, it's like cat claws, are way longer and extend further up.
They're armed umbos.
Exactly. They're armed umbos, Alex. Well done.
Thank you. So can we get a little asthma here?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Terrifying. It's very spooky.
One of these resonates really well.
it resonates with me for sure.
Is this good podcasting?
This is great podcasting.
Me plucking cone scales.
They are big cones. So the one you're having in your hand yeah. easily would be the size of a acorn squash.
I was going to say like a human skull.
Yeah. Okay. I can see that. Yeah. Yeah.
I was holding it up in an Alas Poor York style thing.
Yeah, you are. It is one. It's a little bit small, I think, overall.
Fair enough.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not, it's going to hurt you if it falls for sure.
Oh yeah. This isn't quite a Widowmaker, but it at least is going to put you in the hospital.
Yes. And they're very closely related. I should note to the yes. Coulter pine. So Coulter pine, Torrey pine, and the ghost pine, they're all a part of the, one subfamily or subsection of the family Pinaceae.
Okay.
And they all grow in similar ways where they grow in kind of hot, dry areas. They all grow to have like big cones that stay attached and they kind of grow outwards. I think Coulter pine's the only one that really kind of maintains a very standard tree-like form.
Yeah.
All the rest kind of grow out and have forms that are not quite what you'd expect.
Interesting.
They're very, very strange in that regard, but it makes sense. They're all related.
I kind of like that little subsect.
Oh yeah.
It's kind of neat. I like when there's like just a little group of, I mean, especially pine is like such a classic like old house, you know?
Yes, yeah, it's true. They are the Starks, aren't they?
I would say so, yeah.
I think that's very fair.
And they have these like this little group of cousins out there in the sticks who like just do something different. It's yeah. it's nice to see a new take on an old classic, you know
well,
what I mean,
that
Casey?
That is very well said, Alex. Completely agree. The bark, utility bark. There's nothing to it. It's fine. It's okay. It's got a little orange wow. fleck underneath it, but like it's not gonna blow you away. It's nice.
If you put it next to a ponderosa, you're not even gonna see that orange fleck.
You're not even gonna see it. Yeah. The orange flake is covered by a rough bark on the outside.
Cool.
So it's fine. The needles also, I should note, because we'll talk about this in a second. They hang down, and they're very gray. So they have this gray cast along the outside, but they're very droopy.
Is that stomatal bloom?
It is mostly stomatal bloom. Yeah.
Okay. The grayness of it.
Yeah. Exactly.
So if you rubbed it off, it would look like a green pine needle.
Yeah, I believe so. Yeah. Stomatal okay. lines are on all sides of the needles.
Wow.
So they have three needles, which essentially take a circle and then cut it into three wedges.
Right.
And then they have stomatal bloom on all sides of those wedges on the
wow.
inside and on the outside.
Wow.
So exactly right.
Interesting.
Now these cones are generally going to be on the stems and the twigs, and they don't fall off for years sometimes.
Wow.
So they will just be set on there, and they are laterally arranged is what it's called.
Laterally arranged.
Yeah.
On so, the stem?
Exactly.
Okay.
What this means is that they kind of pop out on the same side of the branch every year. So if you're looking at a tree, they have like, here's one that's up here, and then a little bit lower down is another one, and then a little bit lower down is another one.
Okay.
Where they've all been put out on the twigs, and then as the twigs grow and get bigger and become more larger stems, you can see there's laterally these old cones, rather from new at the end to older cones going down the stem.
Right. It's kind of interesting. I like when that happens because it reminds me of like tree rings.
Yeah.
Like you can see the years go back, the cones from the
yeah.
past years.
You can see them decaying a little bit, yeah. kind of getting old, falling, or getting enclosed in the tree. That happens with some other species that do this.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a word for when the tree keeps the cones? Because I know that larches kind of do a similar thing.
Yeah. They just say that the cones are persistent is
persistent.
The only term. Yeah. So
nice.
not quite a technical term, I guess.
That's one anthropomorphism I'm on board
All
with.
All right. Okay. Mark that down then.
Very persistent cones.
The other thing about these persistent cones is that they are not serotonous. And this, I think, is something that's fascinating, which I think is a perfect dovetail into the next thing that we're going to be talking about.
Wow.
Essentially, they are growing in a space that's just warm enough and has just enough water, like 10 inches is kind of one of the minimums,
mm-hmm.
that they are able to compete and grow and be successful. Everywhere lower is like valley bottoms that are just way drier and tend to not have as many big trees like pines. They would get like maybe a couple big oaks, valley oaks, something like that.
Okay.
And then as you go further up, you end up getting ponderosa pine and Coulter pine taking over when it gets just a little bit less dry.
This is like they're like in terms of class,
uh-huh,
they're sort of like that middle class that's like, you're not like poor enough to get benefits, but you can't really afford anything.
Yeah. That's fair. this is a middle class
experience.
Tree. Speaking from experience. Anyway, I really see this tree where it's at.
Do you know what I'm saying though?
I think
they're,
so. Yeah.
They're not quite in that valley where they can like, it's like lush. They can really.
Ooh, no, kind of opposite. The valley's way drier. Oh,
well, I take it all back.
Yeah. But no, I think it's fair. You're just going the opposite direction. So in the valley, it's very dry. It's a hard scrabble life.
Okay.
You can't really get a good amount of water in life. Smaller things, shrubs, grasses, they can do just fine.
Mm-hmm.
As you go up towards the top, everything gets a little bit more lush. And I say lush, but it's like a Mediterranean lush. So
sure.
You still have like climate that is very warm and dry for significant portions of the seasons.
Okay. Okay.
So it would be the same, Alex. I think the only difference is it would get better as you go up rather than as you go down to the valley.
You're telling me.
Yeah. So work on getting up there, Ghost Pine. So the thing that I really was kind of like touching on earlier, mm-hmm, about like how this tree's growing is something I want to talk about because I answered a question from somebody a while ago and I was a little remiss because I was like, I don't know this for sure, but I'm going to answer the question. And then I'm going to go back and look at it and then correct myself if I need to. Every now and then I do that. I just sometimes get it right where I'm like, I have an educated guess. I'm going to give it to you. And then if I'm wrong, I'll tell you.
A little shoot first, ask questions later.
Exactly. That's what I do.
Answer
questions later. Yeah. Shoot first and then surrender and then answer the questions that come. That's how I do it. So in this case, someone said, well, why are these cones so big?
Mm.
And I was like, I don't know. There are three species that we already touched on, the Torrey pine, the Coulter pine, and the Ghost pine, that all grow in southern central California. They say that this is used to be endemic to California, but it actually has several trees that have been found growing in the southern areas of southern Oregon.
Ah.
The southern areas of southern Oregon. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. And it's a, it's just up in those like Josephine County kind of areas, Gold Hill, if you've ever heard of this.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's in that area, but a lot of them have been cut down. Some of the oldest trees, allegedly, I was told a story, they got cut down because they were putting in I-5.
Oh, geez.
And so someone said, "Ooh, no, you can't cut down these trees. Like this is like an ancient grove of trees that are so rare in Oregon. Don't do that." Lo and behold, the trees were all cut down like a week later. And now we have a freeway.
Tragic.
Yeah. So I'm not going to sit here and tell you that is a 100% true story, but this is what I've heard and none of it surprises me.
Well, the guy driving the bulldozer was colorblind.
Oh, that's right. He was colorblind. So he couldn't see the flags.
You can only use that so many times, you know?
Yeah. Right. Why is every bulldozer driver colorblind? Can we get a test for this somehow? So they are now considered and have been for a long time, California endemic species.
Okay.
But it really should be considered Californian floristic province endemic species.
Wow.
It just so happens that that perfect flat line that delineates the state of Oregon from the state of California,
mm-hmm,
is like a latitudinal line. It means nothing. Like,
sure.
They didn't say, okay, the Siskiyous, that's where the line is. Everything below the Siskiyous Everything above them is us.
Okay.
This was, they just said, okay, at this exact latitude,
yeah,
that is the line.
There's no environmental delineation along with it.
Exactly.
Or reasoning to go
along. Right? The bioregion kind of thing.
Sure.
So when you say something is a California endemic, it's like, okay, yes, I see that. The Torrey pine's a perfect example. It grows like south and north of San Diego and like some islands, and that's it.
Hmm.
Versus something like this where, oh, it's a California endemic, but it's only that because you drew the line like exactly where you did.
Right.
But really, it should actually go a little bit more, a little bit different. Like, it should be endemic to California and Oregon.
But people don't say that about it?
No, I know. I've not read it, even though in our notes, there's a whole thing about the history of it in Oregon.
Interesting.
So I think people just haven't updated it yet.
Okay.
Because you don't find it in Oregon natively anymore, but it used to be. We just cut them down.
So is it still considered endemic?
Now, this is a question for another time, Alex.
Wow.
Yeah. that is something we're not going to even get into right
now. Okay, fair enough.
But we will get into the fact that where it grows is a very hot environment. Mm-hmm. So it has this ghostly appearance because that is essentially an adaptation for this really warm Mediterranean zone where the things that you see, like you know colors very well. You're a very color-oriented person.
Sure.
In terms of like design, right?
Uh-huh.
So if someone was going to say, okay, give me a cool color palette for the Southwest, like a desert Southwest kind of thing, what would you think of?
I would think of pastels.
Okay.
Lots of purple.
Mm.
And maybe a little touch of pink.
I feel like the purple would be up on the kind of the sky a little bit.
Yeah, yeah, like a sunset. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And then, of course, you got your like sand color,
mm-hmm,
which you just call sand.
Yeah, that would be like a light tannish gray, mm-hmm, sort of thing. And then if you were thinking, so you have the pinks as well.
Yeah.
So would you add in something like a light blue, like turquoise kind of thing?
Yes.
Right? Like yeah, almost the color of your hat you're wearing right now.
Yeah, kind of blue. Blue green, like sea green. Maybe?
Exactly. Yeah. Seafoam green, mint yeah, green, that kind mm-hmm of thing. Exactly. And that is not something that is unique to the Southwest, but it's unique to places that have plants growing in them that are adapted to a warm climate.
Interesting.
And a lot of hot weather. Yes. Alex was like, huh.
Well, I was going to start adding things to it, but I stopped myself because I'm like, just let Casey finish his thought before wow, interjecting
and
all this.
And I stopped my thought so that you could say something. This is like those two little mice. Oh, no, you first.
You know what I say? Let's call the whole thing off.
Let's get out of here.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Completely Arbitrary.
Alex. I can't let that happen. I can't. I just can't. In good conscience. We still have at least 6 more ads we need to play.
Understood.
Yeah. So it's a legitimate thing that everyone sees. So the color palette that you found or that you just kind of described,
uh-huh,
that would be something that people would recognize in the same similar places across the world.
Sure.
They would see the same color yeah palettes, whether that is in the Middle East or in Australia, in central Brazil, or any of those other desert kind of spaces. And it's because a lot of these plants will develop very light-colored foliage because light colors do not absorb as much as dark colors.
Right.
So they will get.
Yeah, we just talked about this.
We did last week. In depth, right? Yeah. But this is a little bit different, where they're not so much doing the absorption of the light in this case. It's more the heat that is coming with it.
Sure.
So if you're out standing in a white shirt versus a black shirt, you know, and you can actually, I've seen an experiment where someone took little like squares of fabric, mm-hmm, they were of different colors on the spectrum, laid them out in the middle of the day over a bunch of freshly fallen snow. Hmm. And let the sun shine down on it. And then they would measure how much it melted wow underneath each of them. And it was very linear progression going down, where white, almost nothing at all.
Yeah.
As you went over and went through the entire spectrum and then went to black, black had sunk down significantly more
wow
than all the rest because it just absorbs the heat.
Interesting. So desert plants grow lighter colors
yeah
so that they do not soak up the heat of the sun.
Exactly.
That's
and that is why this looks like a ghost. It's
oh
an ephemeral thing.
God, Casey.
Yeah, isn't that fun?
This is so fun.
Yeah.
That was the definition of a fun fact.
Yes, that's what I'm here for.
So your podcast has like fun facts?
That's what you do, just fun facts? Did I say that to you?
Yeah, you
oh
told
God
me that.
Did I tell everyone else this?
Casey went to a function at a botanical garden, and somebody asked what he does for a living, and he said, "Well, I have a podcast about trees."
About trees and other related topics.
And their response was, "Oh, so like fun facts?"
Yeah, I was very upset by that. I didn't say anything. I just looked at him as like, this is not even a hill I'm willing to climb, much less die on. So I was just like, yeah, it's we have more to it, but yeah.
Oh, God.
Anyway, I don't think we got a new listener. Sorry.
So, never say that about anything, by
yeah
the way.
It's very like, oh, it was, I felt like I just got a pat on the head.
Yeah.
That's
it's
fine.
It's very condescending.
So the other thing that I love about this tree in terms
yeah
of where it's growing and how it's growing, as I told you, this foliage is very droopy.
Yeah.
Yeah. I always thought like, oh, it must be like getting dry, getting desiccated.
Now this was my idea because we've talked about turgor pressure.
Yeah.
And how turgor pressure is like when a leaf stands out straight
yeah
horizontal. If that plant gets a little dry and thirsty, that leaf will kind of sag.
Yeah, wilts.
Because there's water pressure shooting through the leaf when it has enough to drink.
Exactly.
Making it firm and straight.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
But
not in this case.
Okay.
So in this case, it's actually probably more of an adaptation for the tree. It might be literally that the tree is resting, so it doesn't need to have the turgor pressure as much.
Sure.
So that could be the case. Now, the tree doesn't want to be, you know, too dry, but it actually works in its favor either way, because as it's hanging down, it has more of a vertical orientation.
Mm-hmm.
Now, vertical orientation is good because when the sun is coming up and going over and then going back down, when it's the height of the day, it's shining straight down. So it's actually glancing sideways off the leaves.
Wow.
There is, what is it? They call it magnetic termites. I think it's in Australia.
Magnetic termites?
Yeah.
Now, I told you, I've been getting, and I'm going to reveal it here on the podcast.
Please.
One of my greatest shames recently is that I'm kind of having an ADHD phase with Marvel stuff.
Don't be shamed. It's okay.
I'm so sorry to everyone.
Oh, geez. Everyone just collectively turned off the radios. Shit, Alex.
But magnetic termites.
Yes.
Sounds like something that a supervillain would use to like collapse buildings.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, that would be good.
What are magnetic termites?
They're not near as cool. Well, they actually are just as cool for completely different reasons.
Sure. Nature in itself is just kind of cool for different reasons.
Alex, that is gorgeous.
Well,
so these
put that on a t-shirt.
Really,
Quote me. Nature is cool by itself for a bunch of different reasons.
Alex Croson. I think that would make a killer shirt.
I'd wear it.
Just with a thumbs up. Well, these termites, Alex, they're cool because they build these giant, like, 10-foot mounds.
Oh,
that
yes.
Are magnetically oriented east-west, I think? No, north-south.
Mm.
North-south. They're oriented. I can't remember which direction off the top of my head because I have to do the math of what it would be like.
Okay.
But essentially, they grow and are oriented such that in the morning, so it would be in the east, they are flattened. And they are kind of like these big, long monoliths that are kind of big and flat. Like, just take your hand and put your palm upwards.
I'm doing it.
Now, if the your wrist was the ground, the sun comes in from one side, mm-hmm. and it hits and warms up that side.
Okay.
Then as the sun raises and goes up to the midday,
mm-hmm.
it's shining directly down. It just glances off and only directly hits the very top of your fingers.
Okay.
So the rest of your hand's not basically getting hit directly with any sun at all. It's not getting too hot. Then as it goes over to the other side.
For like a minute though, right?
I mean, yeah. Well, I mean, it's just, you know, for an extended period of time. So you're not like, imagine if your palm is flat, it's getting the straight beating of the sun all day, every day.
I see. Okay.
So it's just minimizing it, however,
gotcha.
whatever that time is.
Okay.
So as it's vertically oriented, the two things happen. One, you get warmth on one side of the thing. Then as it goes up, you get warmth on the other side. Then you have the other side in shade.
Sure.
So then those animals, the little termites, can like move from one side to the other to maintain the perfect temperature
wow.
for wherever they want to be.
Oh my God.
Yeah, it's brilliant. And also it helps the way they have it. It's, the whole design of it is a scientific anomaly. Like, they're wow. fascinating creatures.
That's amazing.
So our tree does a similar thing, where if it's hanging down, it's always going to be blasted by the sun from only the sides. But then as the midday comes, then they're more getting glancing blows. And there's always going to be some side that's probably more or less in the shade.
Interesting case.
Yeah.
Can I propose a theory to why that's also good?
You may.
But it's you're immediately going to poke a bunch of holes in it because it doesn't make any sense.
That's not true.
In your mind, you will.
Okay.
Maybe not out loud to my face.
I'll go back in my journal. Alex's theory was pretty dumb. Don't know what to say.
So I'm thinking, like, if it rains, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The rain will come down and hit those needles and immediately roll straight off into the basal region around. Casey's trying not to laugh.
No, I'm not.
You're smirking.
I'm smirking, saying that's probably accurate.
Okay, okay, okay.
I read your
childish grin as like trying not to laugh at my dumb theory.
No, I think that is a perfectly fine theory.
Okay.
But
instead of like landing on the needles and then just staying there and evaporating.
Yes. Yeah, right? Yeah, yeah. I think this is probably accurate. Like, if not the official cause, I think it's like success by a thousand different things.
It's a happy accident, maybe, or a side effect. That's like, yeah, that helps.
Yes, but see, that's evolution. It's just all these small little things happen to work a little bit better.
Sure.
What was the main purpose of it? Sometimes it's very clear and obvious. Other times it's like, no, this just happens to be something that works really well,
right,
and solves like six problems at once.
Yeah.
So I think you're not far off.
Or one problem solved by with six solutions.
Yeah, which is definitely evolutionarily sustainable.
Yeah. Well, you know, they cross over.
Yeah, there is. There's some crossover there. So another couple of cool things about this tree.
Wow, I love these kinds of episodes.
I'm so glad you do.
You know, we just have fun facts on this show.
This is our fun facts episode. Oh, it's gonna get a little fun after this. So this tree, Alex, uh-huh. I do like these too, because I could be like, well, and here's one more.
Right. And I'm like,
one more.
When's it going to end? Interesting.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And you don't know, which is great.
And then I'm like, when's it going
to
end?
Yeah. But see, my job is to keep amping them up each time. So by the time I get to the last thing, you're engrossed.
And and you have to stop one before I get sick of it.
Exactly. Yeah. Because then the whole thing, then you end up just editing that out anyway. So
fair enough.
Right. So this tree is fire. It's a fire adapted tree.
Sure.
Now, fire-adapted tree, let's take the knobcone pine, for example, or the lodgepole pine.
Knobcone
pine, yeah, which is Pinus attenuata. It's another tree that grows down in this kind of area in Northern California, Southern Oregon, the Siskiyous, the Klamaths. And it's a tree that has these much smaller cones and much smaller seeds. So, big cone, this is what I was talking about, where I kind of said to some people, like, ooh, here's a thing, this is me backing it down. I said the cone probably got really big because there might have been megafauna that were eating the seeds and eating the cones. Then the cones grew these spikes to basically be like, back off, baby. Don't eat this.
Wow.
That's not true.
Okay.
Because why would that happen? There's no like succulent thing to make the animals say, oh, I'm going to eat that, so that then the seed can be passed through and be planted.
Right. It's not like a fruit.
Exactly.
It is sort of the fruit of a conifer, but right? it's not like a yummy, it's not, as Paul F. Tompkins would say, something you pop in your mouth and go yum, yum.
Yes, exactly. You have it perfectly. So because of that, this is, I had to go back and think like, okay, well, why is this the case? And it turns out that these three trees have such large seeds with vestigial wings on it, which means they don't do anything.
Okay.
It's like a dodo has vestigial wings.
Ah.
They're so small, it doesn't do anything. They happen to be there when the bird evolved, but now they've unevolved the use of them. They just don't need them anymore.
It's like our appendix.
Exactly.
Or tailbone.
Exactly, Alex. You get it. That's perfectly right.
Cool.
So this is these little wings that don't do a whole lot. The seeds are too big, so if they fall, the wings don't do anything at all. They just fall straight down.
Hmm.
Whereas other seeds with wings on it that are a little larger, the seeds themselves are smaller, then they actually like will twirl down like a little helicopter, like a little samara off a maple tree.
Yes, yeah.
So this tree doesn't do that. None of these three do in this family.
Hmm.
Big seeds that get taken by birds, specifically the scrub jay and the Steller's jay for our tree, the ghost pine.
Okay.
So these two species of birds, which by the way, I need to register this with everyone. Are you ready? My favorite bird is the scrub jay. I love them.
Wow.
They're so fun.
Mark it down.
We'll have to talk about this some other time.
Okay.
We still have a whole other section that I want to get to quickly, and you're going to pop off when we talk about it.
Oh my God.
So the scrub jay is a bird that likes to live in these kind of middle habitats. They like the little woodland kind of areas.
Okay.
They live in the cities all the time. They are perfectly fine with like open spaces, with little shrubs, little trees, other things over here. And they just kind of cruise around. They're the ones that are like light blue with like white on their chests and things.
Oh yeah. I'm looking at a picture right now.
Yeah. They're the ones that you see all the time hanging out and just like doing weird stuff. And they are like, wah, 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 like that kind of eyes.
Even up here?
Oh yeah. There's some that are right next to my house. I sit on my porch all the time and watch them.
Huh.
At dusk, they just kind of chill and like catch bugs. Like,
aww,
they're just so much fun.
Cool.
They're corvid, so they're very closely related to crows and things.
Wonderful.
And those are, I think, my favorite bird group.
That's mine too, yeah. Casey.
Oh, yes. Crowson. And then the Steller's jay is a very closely related species, but that's the one that's like dark blue with the big black like sash on its head, like this big tall thing of feathers that go down the middle.
Okay, yeah.
It's like its head is like dark black.
Yes, I always confuse this for like a blue jay, but I don't know if we have blue jays.
Yeah,
here.
And honestly, we call them jays, but I think a technical blue jay is from a different space.
Yeah.
But yes, I agree. I used to always call them just blue jays.
I think it's an eastern bird.
I think you're right. So these little birds will go collect these seeds, and between the two of them, they actually do the job of dispersing the seeds, because this tree will get killed by fire and it will not resprout. So it just is dead. Other trees, the knobcone pine, it will resprout because its cones are serotonous. So fire comes through, then it opens it up, and then bloop, 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 they all fall out. And then you have a new tree scrub.
Okay.
Your scrub jays will take seeds from one tree and move it around kind of close to where that tree is. And then some of those will end up growing. The Steller's jay is a much more intense flyer, so it will take trees from one grove and go several kilometers and then plant it somewhere else.
Seeds,
yes. What did I say?
Trees.
Oh, God.
It's essentially the same thing.
It's a proto-tree.
That's right.
So, yeah, that's what they do. They move these seeds around a long distance, and then the other one moves them around a small distance. So between the two of them,
wow,
they are constantly moving these trees to new habitats. And the trees have developed this whole big cone because they want these big seeds that are liked by these birds. Yeah, but it's one of those fancy things. Like
that is really interesting.
It's a bird dispersal mechanism that's like kind of unique from a bunch of others. So like even the whitebark pine, it's the same thing, but they're not like dealing with fire. They're just having this bird that made this relationship, and now that bird works with this tree, and that works.
Yeah.
This one is just a little bit different because they throw in this consistent, frequent fire that helps move things around and like start the process over again in a weird way.
That's great.
Yeah, it's fascinating.
It's very smart.
Now, another thing, Alex, about these seeds.
Is this the grand finale?
This is the grand finale.
Oh my
Everyone
gosh.
Buckle up.
I'm so excited.
The grand finale of the Pinus sabiniana. This tree used to be called the pine.
Wow.
And feel free to bleep that out. That's fine. It is a derogatory pejorative term for the native peoples of Central California.
Oh, shit. Okay.
Now, it has been in common parlance for many years, and it's derogatory because native peoples very consistently would eat tubers and bulbs and things, and so they would have digger sticks, and that is not a pejorative term. They are sticks used for digging up roots. So
sure, okay.
they would do that, and it's just very common. Everyone does that. Peoples everywhere have done this for thousands of years. Up here we have camas. That's the big thing that peoples in the Willamette Valley would eat.
Man, white people will turn fucking anything into a derogatory
right?
term.
And it doesn't take a whole lot to make the jump from a very offensive word for African Americans.
Yeah.
So it played off of this.
Wow.
But it wasn't the exact same term. So it's not like, oh, no, don't say that. It was this, you know, like the football team from Kansas City. You know what I mean? Or I'm sorry, not Kansas City. Also them, but the football team from Washington, D.C. The
Oh.
Yeah. Feel free to bleep that out too. So this was a term that over the last several decades, people have been like, stop, like, don't use that term anymore. And they would call it that because these big seeds were a huge part of the diet of all the native peoples in Central California, where this tree grew. So they would collect the seeds and they would make them into all sorts of different things. They taste and have a flavor like the Italian stone pine, which Ooh. Is what you have in pestos most often.
Sure.
So they're very good things. And so they would call this tree the pine. And when I learned about this, and like, I was like, why is that? That name feels wrong to me, but I don't know why.
Yeah.
It took zero time to figure it out. And then I was like, we can't call that anymore. And there's a bunch of people. I read one thing by Donald Lanner, who's a great dendrologist. And he said, dendrology is not, does not need to perpetuate. Paraphrasing this a little bit.
Yeah.
But he said, dendrology does not need to perpetuate historic insults. Therefore, there is no reason we need to keep calling this tree this name.
Hell yeah.
And they have all proposed gray pine. I just think that lacks imagination, as I said earlier. So
yeah, I mean, if you... That's an overcorrection.
It is, yeah. So it's a little bit much. And Ghost Pine's right there. People have called it Ghost Pine. It has got a lot of different names. So I was like, okay, cool. And this started to get me think. I was like, okay, Alex, we're going to do the show. It's going to be about Ghost Pine. How can we pull in, you know, ghosts and spookies and things like this?
Sure.
And first thing I thought of is, you know what? Sometimes to have a tree that we call the Ghost Pine is to leave its past and let that be a ghost.
Mm.
We're going to call it a different thing and let that happen. It then got me to look into the name of this tree to begin with, Alex. And this is really what I thought was fun. So Sabiniana, you'll notice I've said that several times with a bit of a Sabiniana. You know what I mean?
Sabiniana.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So they actually would spell it two different ways. One
Who's
is...
They?
So the taxonomy folks in the world, those scientists. So right now it's spelled Sabiniana.
Mm-hmm.
And it has historically been written a different way. The other way was with an E instead of an I.
Sabiniana.
So essentially the name, it is this argument about, it was spelled S-A-B-I-N-A. E-A-N-A, Sabiniana,
right.
Rather than Sabiniana.
Right.
Now, I went down a bit of a rabbit hole about this.
As you do.
As one does. And it turns out that they were arguing over a dead language, let's remember this, during the Roman times. They would say, hey, you're a part of the Roman Empire now. You can still speak your same language. We don't care. But the official, the administrative stuff, that's going to be in Latin or in Greek if you're over on that other side. We'll let both of those happen. So as the empires fell and changed and the world became different, languages changed and the vernacular language like French, English, German, they became what everyone talks. But in the scientific worlds, they kept using Latin in the religious worlds and all these like higher level things, so to speak. So Latin, of course, became the de facto thing for botany and stuff. So all of the Latin names that we talk about now are just this, again, vestigial language that we were working with. So everyone was arguing, well, technically, because Sabiniana is from a person who's a man, the specific epithet should be masculine because you're naming it after that person.
And I was Sabiniano? Like,
okay, hold on. Yeah. What? And so I ended up finding an article that talks just about this. It's in our show notes.
Yeah.
And essentially, what they are talking about and what they noted is, all trees as a thing are feminine.
Wow.
All trees, except for the scientific name for maples, Acer, that's neutral.
Okay.
But if you are talking about a tree, you say that tree over there, that tree is feminine. So in the language of Latin, trees are feminine.
Wow.
Now, Alex, if you go through and read some of the things about how we name scientific trees,
mm-hmm.
the genus, the first part, has to match with the specific epithet. The specific epithet has to match with the genus in terms of the old Latin gendered term.
Sure.
Male, or rather masculine and feminine.
Yeah, Spanish is the same way.
Exactly, because it's very, very influenced of Latin or by Latin. So you have certain things. So genus names derived from Latin, and I'm reading from this article by Sura Jesselson. And Sura says that genus names derived from Latin that end in U-S are masculine. Words ending in A are feminine.
Okay.
Words ending in U-M are neutral. So if you are making a Latin name, then you have to make sure that the specific epithet matches the other name, Quercus rubrum. So Quercus rubra. Now, I went down a rabbit hole about this for two reasons. One, I wanted to talk to you about the fact that all of these names have all these weird conventions, depending on if it is a Greek genus name or a Latin genus name.
Wow.
Then if you add someone's name into it as an honorific, and you say, Menziesii, that also has to match. But if the Menziesii person is a masculine, is a man, then that can stay. And then you don't necessarily have to match it because you're doing it in a certain way, but if it comes from Greek, then there's like four other things that are masculine versus four other things that are feminine. And it became this like, what the hell?
What is going on?
It is mind-blowing. And they had this huge discussion in the realms of, like, should this be an E or should this be an I? Because Sabine, which is this guy who also, by the way, David Douglas, mm-hmm. Is the one who found this tree and initially described it. First found in Oregon, by the way, but he lost it in the Rogue River. He lost all of his notes.
Oh, shit.
So then he found one like 5 or 6 years later in California. He was like, oh, yeah, sweet. Okay. Did that. Yeah. Poor guy had a rough life, you know? So he.
Rough death, too.
Everything about his life was either perfectly great or really kind of rough.
Yeah. Thanks, David.
Yeah. Thanks, Dave. He ended up naming it after this guy named Sabine, Joseph Sabine. And I think it's Sabine. It's S A B I N E.
Okay.
So that guy apparently did not care for David Douglas at all, but David Douglas thought he was a god.
Oh,
it's very tragic.
That is really tragic.
But so he ended up naming this and a couple other things after him. But the Latinized version of Sabine is Sabinius. So they would then say, okay, well, if it's Sabinius, then we need to make that from us, U.S., uh-huh. which is, again, I think it's feminine. They had to switch that over to be a masculine name. Because of Pinus ending in U.S., which is masculine,
wow.
even though the tree itself is considered a feminine object.
So, what?
Where are we? We are at the end of the episode talking about this tree. I just wanted to whet your appetite for two things.
That's fucking insane.
One, we're going to go through one of these things someday,
uh-huh.
and I promise I will give it in a way that is palatable.
Okay.
And I'm going to say, here are the Latin things. Here's a trick to the code of how we name trees.
I had no idea this was happening.
I knew about it, Alex, in the back of my head. I knew there's masculines
anything,
and feminine.
Casey?
I didn't. And I just was like, you know what? I don't know this well enough. I'm not going to talk about
wow.
it. But when I was looking into this, I was like, what is in a name in this tree? That's kind of this genesis. And then I was like, hey, I wanted to talk about all these things, like ecologically speaking. But then I was like, well, what is in a name? And you have this common vernacular name that's super offensive to the point where there is actually a tribe in Central California that made, I think it was in 1926, they made an effigy and wrote on it D-I-G-G-E-R.
Wow.
And then burned it and danced around it, chanting.
Nice.
So I was like, hell yeah.
Holy
go
shit.
For it, you guys.
Yeah.
So it's like, it's really a completely awful name that I'm so happy we are finally getting rid of. But it was also like, okay, well then, what else is in this name? And I kept looking down, and every place you see, they everyone's like, oh, a note about the scientific name of this tree.
Mm.
And it's this argument about like masculine and feminine and like, what does it come from? Dead Greek or dead Latin and all this other stuff. And I'm like, oh my God, what is in a name?
I have a question. Who gives a fuck?
That's the Alex Croson I love.
That was our fascinating conversation on the ghost pine. We have to review and rate this tree and give it a impose upon it a numerical number to determine its worth.
After all that.
I know. The fuck is our show? But we got to do so after a break. We'll be right back with Completely Arbitrary. Alex here. Here's a little something about me. I love to be cozy. Coziness is of utmost importance to me. And I am in a constant search for coziness. And that is why we present to you Cozy Earth. Cozy Earth makes luxurious bedding and clothing products. And what do I mean by luxurious? Let me tell you this. I now have Cozy Earth sheets on my bed. I wear a full Cozy Earth sweatsuit to bed. And I have been getting the best sleep of my life. It is quite literally the softest material I've ever put on my body, and my skin is so happy in it. I usually have a little bit of a sensory thing. I don't like things touching my skin. Clothes are tough, but with Cozy Earth, I am treated to superior softness, unparalleled fabric, materials, and weave. This is a real endorsement. It's the most comfortable material to ever grace my birthday suit. And guess what? You deserve this coziness too. So treat yourself to the ultimate in comfort and indulgence with Cozy Earth bedding and sleepwear. And you know what? Completely Arbitrary listeners, a little inside detail here. You all get 35% off at CozyEarth.com with promo code TREES. That's T-R-E-E-S for 35% off at CozyEarth.com. Now you go and get cozy.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Welcome back to Completely Arbitrary. Should I redo that?
No.
Okay. That was our discussion of the ghost pine. Pinus sabiniana. Casey, it's time for our review.
That's right.
Here's how it works. We're running a little long on this episode.
Yep. So we're 30 seconds.
I think we should limit it to like a tweet's worth.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Excuse me, an X post. Here's how it works. We're going to have some final thoughts on this tree and then give it a rating of 0 to 10. Golden jack-o'-lanterns.
That's right.
Of honor. Casey, as a resident expert, we'll begin with you.
Awesome. So I gave a lot about this tree already. I think this tree is spectacular.
Yeah.
I think it is simultaneously under and over planted. Here's why.
Wow.
This is not a good tree to have on a street.
Fair.
It just is not.
Oh, yeah, of course.
It's dropping like small watermelon-sized cones, yes, with sharp points all over the place.
Like personal seedless watermelon size.
Exactly. Do not have this growing anywhere that you are concerned about it hitting something or someone.
Fair.
However, if you're not worried about that, you should definitely plant this tree.
Yeah.
It takes all the cool conditions. It's a fun anomaly. You know, like you see a tree that does something wild and you're like, whoa, that's cool.
Yeah.
So it's
doing something new.
It's doing something new. And I like that. I think it's beautiful. It doesn't have the effect of like make a big shade canopy kind of thing. So I'm like, it's a novelty of a tree.
It's part of like being a tree.
Yeah.
Is that it provides shade, right?
Right. And this one, because of its growth habit, really doesn't.
Yeah.
Like it's kind of the point.
Sure.
So I'm going to give this an 8.0.
Wow. Like
right there down the middle.
Nice.
So I think it's a fantastic tree. Don't plant it too much. Don't plant it too less. Leave it alone and certainly just admire it when you find it.
Yeah.
And pick up one of these cones and take it home with you because they are just so fun.
They just really
love these trees.
Can I, 8.0,
yeah.
Golden jack-o'-lanterns of honor. I have to say about this cone, this will be my review.
Okay.
I love this tree. I love that the cone is sort of like, if the Coulter pine cone was like the original like computer, you know, like this thing, this huge machine that was unwieldy and only experts could deal with it.
You had to bring it in on a cart with a horse.
Exactly. This ghost pine cone is like the first Apple home computer.
Oh.
It's like refined. It's smaller. It's easy to look at. It's easy to hold.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying?
I do. Yeah.
It's a better design, but it still holds the essence of the Coulter pine.
Yeah, I see.
And I love that about it.
Yeah.
It's kind of a design classic. I would like one, actually. Actually, the reason I don't display my Coulter pine cone in my home is because it's too big and I don't have a surface to set it on.
Uh-huh.
And I don't want that thing falling on...
Yeah.
Landed on my foot or something.
I used to have some, you have a shelf above your bed. And
yes.
It was initially a shelf that I had in my room. And
that's right. Whoa, weird.
Yeah. I had a big part of it and I had a bunch of Coulter pines up there and I had to give myself several thoughts and I was like, am I comfortable sleeping underneath all my Coulter pines on this shelf?
This is literally how people die.
Yeah, exactly.
So yes, this you could absolutely put on a shelf. It would still hurt, but it's no Coulter. A Widowmaker, it's more like I would say it's an ex-boyfriend maker at best. I give the ghost pine nice, solid 7.25. Yeah.
Okay, I appreciate that quarter there.
Yeah, it's not quite a 7.0, not quite a 7.5.
Yeah, not quite a 7.56, not quite a 7.4.
there are infinite possibilities of what it's not.
But yeah, we know it is a 7.25.
That's right.
Excellent.
Very confidently.
Yeah, I like that.
Fabulous tree.
I can't wait till you can see it in person, though. Like, not the one that we have here, but like in its native habitat.
Sure, I'd love to.
I think you'd really dig the appeal of their like their color flavor.
I would love that.
Excellent.
Casey, that was our review and discussion of the Ghost Pine. It is time for a very spooky game.
Let's make it happen.
We don't get too spooked out.
I'm going to... Lights are on still.
This is a house favorite that we've only played, I think, once or twice before.
Okay.
This is Trick or Tree theme song.
Oh, yeah. That's good. That's a good theme song. Nice.
In this game, Casey, I will give you a Latin binomial.
Ah, yes. Speaking of. Yes. Okay.
Speak of the... Devil?
Yeah. Mm. Where is he?
Spooky.
Hail.
You will then tell me... Did you say hail?
No, of course not.
You will then tell me if it is a real tree
mm-hmm.
or if it's a trick, a fake okay. tree that I've planted.
I can do this.
I mean that in a couple different ways. Are you ready?
Oh, I see that other different way. I had to think about that. I was like, is there going to be some plant here that I'm not familiar with? What's going on here?
Are you ready, Casey?
I am ready.
Our first trick or tree.
Okay.
And you have to let me say the name and then I'll say trick or tree.
Yes.
That's kind of part of the rules. So that I have fun too. Cruora biberi. Cruora biberi. Trick or tree?
I think that this is a trick, Alex.
It is a trick.
Yes.
Do you know what this tree could be?
Cruora?
Cruora. Be Barry.
It sounds something like Tom Cruise and Drew Barrymore got together and created a Latin binomial.
It's not quite that.
Damn.
It is close, though.
Okay.
I'm calling this the vampire cedar.
Oh.
Cruora is Latin, sort of, for blood or gore.
Oh.
And Biberi is drink.
Gross.
It's a blood Biberi. Drinker.
Oh, yeah. Okay, yeah. It's like a Berber. What in Spanish, Bebe.
Beber.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
That was good.
Are you ready for your next one?
God, see, you know better about language than I do. All I can do is just explain that Latin is completely idiotic.
Well, I had to Google all this, Casey.
Well, shoot.
These are finely crafted.
Yeah, you did a very good job.
Pinus maximinoi. Trick or tree?
That is a tree.
Casey, you are correct. For a
yes.
bonus point, what is the common name?
I believe that is the Mexican pine.
I have thin leaf pine. Is that the same thing?
I'm not sure. Where's it from? Do you know?
No.
Dang it. Okay.
You might do a quick Google.
I might just quick Google that.
Okay. That is a tree. You've gotten your two for two. Okay, you ready? For your next one? Ostrocedrus chilensis.
That's...
Wow. Oh, trick or tree.
Okay, all right, I'm ready. I believe that is a tree.
Yes, and for an extra point, what is the common name?
Say it one more time.
Ostrocedrus chilensis.
That is going to be the Chilean cypress.
That is correct. Do you know the local name for it?
Cyprus, because they're in Chile.
There they just call it Cyprus.
They just call it Cyprus.
This is, they call it the Cordilleran Cyprus.
Oh, okay, because there's a... I understand this.
How about this one? Mephitidae, Florida.
Mephitidae, Florida.
Mephitidae, Florida. Tidae. I know what it sounds like. Trick or tree. I'm happy to spell it.
Could you use it in a sentence?
Wow, look at that. Mephitidae, Florida.
I think that's a tree. That sounds like a small tree that we would probably argue isn't a tree.
Casey, this is a trick.
What? Florida? You even... What is... What?
Mephitidae. I cannot say that word. It's an A before the E. That's why it's weird. Mephitidae?
Yeah.
Is the family that skunks are in.
Oh.
It's the skunk family. Florida is named after the state of Florida. This is the skunk ape.
The skunk ape.
Which is the regional Sasquatch down there.
That's the regional Sasquatch.
Yeah.
I honestly, when you first said meth with a PH,
yeah,
I heard meth mm-hmm. for a second, and I thought you were making a joke about people in Florida doing right. drugs, and I was like, that's a little lowbrow, Alex.
That is lowbrow. I wouldn't
so,
do that.
Yeah. That's like their Yeti, essentially?
Yeah, yeah,
the
yeah.
skunk
it's,
ape?
It's the regional woodland Yeti, but it lives in the swamps
yeah.
in the Everglades, and its whole thing is that it smells like a skunk.
Yeah, it's rough.
So if you smell that skunk ape smell,
you gotta
hightail it.
Wow. I love that.
Yeah.
I had never heard of that before.
Are you noticing a trend?
Yeah, everything here stinks.
Excuse me?
Is there a skunk ape?
Do you mean in my apartment?
Yeah, no. Yeah, it's just playing a trick here.
I keep a very clean home.
It looks like there's either a tree or it's a scary monster.
Going like this.
Yeah. Like just, you know, a little grainy.
A little motion blur.
Yeah, exactly.
I love that video. It's so funny. It's so clearly just a guy.
Nah, no way. Nah, it's real.
Next one, Case.
Okay.
Pinus mortui variety vivi. V-I-V-I.
V-I-V-I.
Trick or tree.
Oh, I think this is a trick.
It is a trick.
Yes. Okay, hold on. Can I guess this?
Yeah. You want to hear it again?
Please.
Pinus mortui variety vivi.
It is a dead tree that's come back alive.
That's right. It's the zombie pine.
Yeah! That was so good. That was like the best Latin that we've ever come across. Well done, Alex.
Thank you.
And then Acer or Quercus aeternum, that is still, I think, just incredible.
What is... Oh, yes.
Yeah, you just said Quercus for like oak for life. Quercus right. for life.
Quercus aeternum.
That's so good.
Now available as a sticker on arbitrarypod.com/merch. We Ooh. Have plenty of them. Oh, we never mind. I'm getting a nod from our producer. We have taken those off the merch store.
We have sold out of those.
All right, Casey, ready for next one?
I'm ready. Let's do it. Zombie pine. That's so good.
Widringtonia cedarburgensis.
That's
trick or tree.
That's got to be a tree. Like, no offense to you. You're very clever, but that's beyond clever to just pedantic.
This is a tree.
Yes. Okay. Thank God.
It's called the Clan William cedar.
The Clan Williams?
And I'm now wondering if it's like a Scottish Highland tree.
That would be so good. I've never heard of it.
Mm.
It sounds like something from like New Zealand or Australia.
I hope it's real. Yeah, it's real.
Okay.
I Googled obscure trees because if I go to basic, you get them immediately.
I love that. Obscuretrees.com.
That's Casey Clapp's homepage.
It's very, it's a niche market.
All right. You ready for your last? You have two more.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, no. This is the last one.
This is the last one.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm ready.
Cornus lunaris. Cornus lunaris. Trick or tree. I forget my own rule.
I know. And I'm just sitting here silently, also forgetting sometimes and being like, should I say something? Okay. All right. Cornus lunaris.
That's right.
That would mean the moon dogwood. I've never heard of that, but I wouldn't be surprised. But I would also think I would have heard of it.
It's like a ghost pine type thing. It's it's silverish.
Or like a big circular flower.
Oh,
you know,
sure.
Like the bracts make like a perfect circle.
Yeah.
I'm gonna say it's a trick.
It is a trick, Casey.
Oh yes.
What is a moon dog?
A moon dog?
Yeah.
It's a frisbee team out of Montana. I know that.
Is it really?
Yeah, they're called the moon doggies.
It's a werewolf.
Oh my God.
A werewolf is a moon dog.
I feel like this was good, Alex. And I actually,
I like
little,
this one. I like when they have a theme.
And I'm a little bit sad because once I picked up on the theme, I'm like, okay, what could this be?
Yeah.
What could this be? But then you're probably aware. Sometimes I get on this, okay, I can figure this out. This must be real. And then I miss the joke entirely.
Sure.
Everyone else out there is probably like shaking their heads. Like, Casey, you are such an idiot.
I doubt anybody's doing that, Casey. And including me.
That was so good. Moondog is a werewolf.
That's right.
So good.
That was Trick or Tree. Happy Halloween, everybody. It's
Happy
time.
Halloween.
It's time for our completely arbitrary Q&A. Casey, now, as you know, We do Q&A episodes on our Patreon.
That's right.
That's how we get all of these questions. People on our who support the Patreon get to ask questions. And if we don't get to your question on a mainline episode, if it's not selected like the golden child.
It is. And all the other children are sent to the dungeons.
That's right. Or married off to minor lords. we answer all of them in a big marathon record on our Patreon. And we goofed. We missed one, Casey. Yes. This is actually the second time it's happened in the last couple months.
It does happen every now and then.
Yeah. This one's from Sarah. And Sarah very politely emailed us saying, hey, you forgot my question. So, Sarah, here is your question. Salutations, completely arbitrary. Longtime lover and listener of the pod. My question is about citrus greening.
Mm-hmm.
And then in parentheses, Huanglongbing, HLB. I work at a nursery in Northeast Florida, and many nurseries around the state are struggling with citrus. Citrus is required to be ISD drenched in Florida, and scheduled inspections are made by the state. A lot of nurseries around these parts don't even want to carry citrus anymore because of all the issues. It's freaky, but it's a real issue that the Asian citrus psyllid, is that right?
Psyllid
is wreaking havoc on the citrus industry down here. Do you have any hot takes on this issue? Love and appreciate the podcast more than can be described. Thanks, Sarah.
Wow. Thank you, Sarah.
Casey, what is going on with citrus in Florida?
Well, so it's also known as citrus greening, and it's a very, very serious disease for citrus plants.
I see.
And essentially, it's kind of like this disease that causes, it's like bacteria, new shoots, and it causes weird discoloration. So like one side of the fruit's green, the other side of the fruit's the correct color that it needs to be.
Oh, wow.
And it's just, it's also an issue. The psyllid's another insect that causes trouble. So it's just like any disease for any tree that's grown at a mass scale, there's always going to be a big thing. Like there's going to be some insect or disease that just takes off.
Sure.
For one of two different reasons. One, the genes are 99% of the time all the same. So if one is susceptible to a disease, they're all the same susceptible.
Right. We call that, what is that, monoculture?
Exactly. It's a classic problem with monoculture.
Sure.
So that's one issue. And the other issue is you have everything really tightly packed. So if you have all the same genes, but they're spread way out, then you don't necessarily have one disease or one insect getting all of them all at once, all at the same time.
Oh, okay.
So if you have some weird clone that like distributed itself across a vast space, each one's probably going to be okay. But if you put them all right next to each other, then you're jamming them in as close as they can be because you're growing them as a crop rather than a kind of natural forest ecosystem.
I see.
So Douglas firs grow naturally right next to each other and they're all packed in. But as you remember when we talked about the white bark pine and we talked with the folks at Headwaters podcast?
That's right, yeah.
So one of the things that they did in their show, they were talking to a scientist, and the scientist looked at a bunch of subalpine fir in a valley and said, if you're looking at this, all of these trees are further genetically apart from each other than all humans combined.
Mm.
And I was like, whoa, that's a crazy stat. But each one of them is the same species, but they've been growing and doing what they're doing for so long that genetically they are really, really vastly different than each other. So if one gets a disease, it's very likely that another is going to be able to do it. So they just, you know, a certain percentage is going to survive all the time. That's the way it works in a lot of different things, but a lot of trees have developed a forest system that has found a balance with these things.
Mm.
So when we do something like plant 1,000, you know, trees of any sort right next to each other, we constantly have to deal with this because we're throwing things way out of balance in favor of fruit production.
It's literally unnatural.
It's quite literally, yeah. So the ISD is actually imidacloprid. So it's a kind of pesticide that will kill insects. It's an insecticide. Also, I think it's that. It's honestly, I haven't worked with it in a very long time, so I've fallen down on it. Don't listen to me 100%. But essentially, it's a pesticide of some kind. And so you have to drench in the soil so the plants start to put out the insecticide or the pesticide out in their leaves so whatever eats it will die. It's a great word, or it's a great thing. It works very well, but you're essentially putting a bunch of stuff, a bunch of chemicals into the soil so that the plants will take it up, and it causes harm. It's not organic, for instance. It's very difficult to grow an organic thing because it's just going to get destroyed by whatever disease is out there. So in Florida, of course, it's a huge crop is orange and all these different citrus plants. The issue is the same for all of them. All of the other crops, the pecan, remember we talked about pecan. We talked about this with almonds and olives all over the place. Anything that's grown at such a mass scale.
Yeah.
We gotta have different genetics mixed in so that there's never going to be a situation where one disease can come through and wipe out everything.
Sure.
It does not work with capitalism, though. Capitalism requires these systems to go from one to the next and scale very specifically and make everything a industrial system, right? So I am of two minds. I love oranges. You love oranges.
Big time.
We love getting these things. They're delicious. But we've pushed them over this edge and we're dealing with the consequences.
Sure.
And we've come up with great, fantastic scientific ways to do this. But now there's pushback on that because they're like, oh, whoa. You're killing the soil and all the insects and all the biome for this one thing? Is that worth it? Do I want to eat that? Do I want to support an industry that does that?
Mm.
So it becomes this weird moral situation, but it's also a situation of what are we putting into the earth and why are we doing that? Yeah. And is this something we should be doing? Can we come back from this? Is there another method? And inevitably, the other method is diversity, which, my God, that is a term I could talk about all day. Diversity begets stability. It's just a fact of life. So if we were to have two kinds of diversity, one, not all citrus trees, three kinds of things. One, not all citrus trees. We'll have different other fruits growing in this orchard. Two, we will have different kinds of citrus. So we'll have different species, different hybrids, different varieties. And then three, within those varieties and hybrids and species, we will have specific different genetics in there. So it's not all a clone of one specific hybrid or species or variety.
Right.
Where we can say, we're growing all navel oranges, but this is a kind of navel orange that was developed over here, and this is another one that's over here, and this is another one that's over there. They're slightly different, and they might have a little bit better this or that, but you're spreading your risk out. So if an insect comes and attacks one of them, you are going to get, if you have no more than 5% of any one kind of species or variety or tree, then you're only going to lose up to 5%.
Sure. It's kind of hedging your bets.
Exactly.
Is that what that term means?
It's exactly what it is. Okay. It's diversifying. It's kind of hedging your bets is like, I'm gonna have some other things back here. So if one bet fails, then I'm not going to be completely destroyed.
Instead of putting everything on one bet.
Exactly. Not all of your eggs in one basket.
Yeah. There are plenty of these things we could use.
Hey, don't grow all the same citrus in your field. You know what I mean? So to kind of come back to the question, My take on the issue is one from afar. I'm not the farmer there dealing with this. It's not my livelihood. So my thought is you gotta change. And that's what capitalism is like. That's the positive side of capitalism. The market pressures are supposed to lead you to do one thing or another.
Yeah.
So the market pressure should say, well, if it's getting too expensive and it's ruining your farm, stop doing it and do something else. Farm something else.
Yeah, especially if you're like doing serious harm.
Yeah, right? And like you're constantly the one putting in these soil drenches. Like there are people who have done this and been exposed to different pesticides and chemicals so much that now only years and years later are they realizing that they have some health problem.
Oh, geez.
Or they didn't invest in the correct kind of PPE, protective equipment, you know? And this is not the case. I'm not trying to throw anyone on the bus. I don't know what they're doing. And they may have the best possible way to do this. And they're doing as much as they can. And this is just one side of it or something. I don't know. But there's a base fundamental issue that needs to be solved, which is diversifying our crops.
Yeah.
If we have diversity and if we had 10,000 small farms, each one of them growing two oranges, and then over there, that's where they have their oranges. My oranges are over here, and you don't have this big mass of acres and acres and acres and acres, then we might have a better buffer in between all these things.
For sure.
And I could only do a tiny soil drench for my orange tree, and then I will sell these at a local scale. So it's capitalism pushing and pushing for bigger and better and cheaper and faster when we should be slowing that down and saying, hey, how about we diversify everything from the ground up? And then start from there again, or at least pull it back and learn that we need to adjust our spending and consumer habits so that we are not in, we do not expect we're going to have all the most perfect oranges every single year at this exact time.
Well, yeah.
You know?
I mean, we've there's so much wrong with like the American economy, mm-hmm. and like the all these industries have given everybody exactly what they want at any time.
Yeah.
There's a huge cost to that though.
Huge.
Like the thing we're talking about right now.
Yeah, literally and figuratively.
Because we need oranges in the middle of the summer.
Yeah.
That tastes like shit anyway.
Yeah, so it's my take on that is if we can figure out a good way to do it,
yeah.
we should. If we can't, we need to just take a step back, take the loss, accept it, and then move on and do something different and adjust our cultural practices around these kinds of things.
Well said, Case.
Yeah, and it's like we said, has nothing to do with, it's not special to oranges. It is an orange disease and an orange situation,
mm-hmm.
but this is throughout everything, corn, wheat, soybeans, you name it. It's
and also
everywhere.
History teaches us too, like there was the chestnut blight, you know,
yeah.
and the emerald ash borer. And that's because we got a little too carried away with one thing that we got so excited about and planted them fucking everywhere. And then all it took was a single
one thing
incident and then a huge domino effect
yeah.
to just destroy so much.
Exactly right. So I hope they can solve it. I
Me
hope
too.
It can be solved. But if it can't, I think we should take a lesson, like you're saying, from history.
Well said. Thank you so much, Sarah, for your question. We're very sorry we missed it, but we hope we made it up to you. If you've got a question for us, join up on the Patreon, patreon.com/arbitrarypod. You can join at any tier there if you want to support this podcast. If you get to the end of your month, I've said this before, and you think, hey, you know what? The information and entertainment that I got, excuse me, the infotainment that I got from Casey and
wow.
Alex this month.
Beautifully said.
Terrible phrase. Was worth $5, $10 to me. Consider supporting the podcast. It's how we keep the lights on and it's how we keep new episodes coming out every Thursday.
That's right.
Of course, the flagship tier of our Patreon is the Cone of the Month Club. It's based on, Casey, the Jelly of the Month Club from Christmas Vacation.
I 100% knew that.
Every month we send you a sticker of a conifer cone illustrated by a different amazing artist with a little info card. It's very wonderful. We
really
love doing it. And it's the best way to support the podcast. Casey Clapp, happy Halloween.
Happy Halloween, Alex. What an episode. Oh my God. I'm
yeah.
sweating. I'm tired.
I am tired too, in a different way.
Far too excited. Far too excited there.
I also need some dinner.
Oh yeah.
What are you going to eat?
Honestly, I had a giant burrito. I was downtown today.
Nice.
And I got not carnitas. I got a chorizo burrito.
Ooh.
From a place I used to work like 2 blocks away from it.
Wow.
So I'd go there all the time to get a burrito and then like drive away and do my work.
That sounds wonderful.
Yeah. And I hadn't been there for years. And so I was like down there and I'd walk by it and I was like, oh, I'm going to go back there when I'm done with this. And then got a burrito and then I ate that. But it is half the reason it's great. It's like $9 and it's like a giant burrito.
It's like 3 meals worth of food.
Yeah. In fact, I almost stopped and then I was like, don't do it, Casey.
You can't save a little quarter of a burrito.
Nah, you can't do it. Yeah. So I kept going. So I'm quite feeling quite good right now.
I'm on the opposite end. I don't think I've eaten a single fucking thing today.
God, go get yourself some food, buddy.
I will. I will say, as I get older, eating a burrito has just become kind of an impossibility.
What?
Because it just really takes a physical toll on me.
Wow.
Yeah, it's just too much.
We chew it.
But you know what's...
Take bites and chew it, Alex.
Oh, interesting.
Down there.
Oh,
my
okay.
God.
I've been eating it like Garfield would eat a fish.
Yeah, exactly. That's what
dunking the whole thing in my throat.
Just pull out the tortilla.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Completely Arbitrary. Wish you a happy Halloween. Be safe. Have fun. Goodbye.
See you guys. Completely Arbitrary is produced by Alex Croson and Casey Clapp.
Our artwork is by Jillian Barthold, and our music is by Aves and the Mini Vandals.
And you can support the podcast at patreon.com/arbitrarypod.
And find additional readings at completelyarbitrary.com. Thanks for listening.